Is English wine any good? The answer to this question is yes, and some of it is very good. It is primarily white and sparkling, and there's not very much of it. England and Wales together have fewer than 800 hectares, about 3 square miles, of vines for winemaking. Even in England, only a minuscule proportion of the wines on sale are English. And outside of England, you are likely to encounter English wines only when you attend a reception at your local British embassy. The relatively cool English climate and its often cloudy weather are the reasons for the skepticism implied by the question. Winemaking in the world is largely confined to two belts, from 30 degrees to 50 degrees north of the equator and from 30 degrees to 50 degrees south. Beyond 50 degrees north and south, it is too cold for grapes to ripen, whilst in the reaches between 30 degrees north and south, there is no cold season to allow the vines to rest. Only the tiniest bit of England, the tip of the Lizard Peninsula and Cornwall, just scrapes into the vine-growing belt. Yet the temperature is not the most crucial consideration. Rather, it is sunshine. Vines normally require a minimum of 1,500 hours of sunshine, with more needed by red than by white grapes. One drawback to growing vines in England is immediately obvious. The other is the propensity to rain all year. In contrast, for example, to the Mediterranean or California, where there are wet seasons and dry seasons. The dry, sunny weather before the grape harvest, which is characteristic of those two areas, is a gift to winemakers. The weather concentrates the sugars in the grapes, and the subsequent fermentation converts the sugars into a high level of alcohol. A lack of sunny weather means a lack of sugars and a high level of acidity. Too much rain fosters disastrous rots. And if, by some dispensation from heaven, rot is held at bay, the vines will suck up the rainwater and thereby dilute the grape juice. Nevertheless, time and again, attempts have been made to grow grapes. First came the Romans, who invaded, first in 55 BC and again in AD 43, conquered and held England for 3 centuries. They planted vines, possibly for winemaking. Opinions differ here. And in any case, whether they produced it or imported it, they left many Britons with the habits of drinking wine. Later, the influence of the church was crucial, because all institutions from tiny parish churches to great monasteries required wine for communion. This cultivation of vines was facilitated by the warming of the northern European climate for 8 centuries, until the mid-13th century, when it began to cool, thereby worsening the conditions for growing grapes. A century later, the Black Death in the mid-14th century wiped out 1/3 of the population of Europe, which meant that abbeys and monasteries no longer had access to the necessary labor to continue to cultivate all of their own land and increasingly leased it out. Tenants wanted to produce fast-growing cash crops, not vines, which needed tending for years, and vineyards were grubbed up. King Henry VIII's dissolution of the monasteries in the 1530s, which saw the land and buildings sold off or given away, condemned most of the remaining vineyards and ended winemaking on any scale in England. By the late 17th century, when the climate had become considerably colder, the diarist Samuel Pepys described the few English vineyards as brave plantations. So, by the early 20th century, the commercial growing of grapes for wine in England had virtually disappeared. The man responsible for the new dawn was Ray Barrington Brock, managing director of a firm of scientific instrument makers, who was a keen gardener who saw the growing of grapes as a challenge. The overall question was, how to grow grapes in a cool and relatively wet climate. In 1945, Brock established the Oxted Viticultural Research Station. He lived in Oxted, Missouri, the first part of which was established in his own garden. And there for the next quarter century, he experimented with hundreds of varieties of grapevine, most of which were failures in the English climate. He funded all of this by himself, partly by the sale of vine cuttings and the books and pamphlets he wrote on the subject, but primarily from the profits of his main business, having remained in full employment during his years of research. For 15 years, he was able to offset the expenses of the research station against his other income. But in 1960, the tax inspector decided that it would never make a profit and was therefore not a business which could attract tax relief. Brock's devotion to the cause and his financial sacrifices earned him 2 enduring rewards. the Jones Bateman Cup for original research into fruit culture from the Royal Horticultural Society, and a position in history as the founding father of the British commercial wine industry. A beneficiary of Brock's work was Sir Guy Salisbury Jones, GCVO, CMG, MC, DL, the first man in the 20th century to plant a vineyard in England with the intention of making wine for sale on a commercial basis. It was established in the winter of 1951 at Hambledon in Hampshire, and 4 years later the first bottles went on sale, a fact which caused a small media frenzy. Salisbury Jones himself was an asset in awakening the public to English wine. He was tall and imposing, had had a distinguished, if sometimes colorful, military and diplomatic career, and was a notable presence in any assembly. His wines improved markedly over the years and sold widely, and Hambledon became one of the first English vineyards to export wine to the United States. There are now many small and medium-sized wineries in England and Wales. Although some growers persist with red wine grapes, most of the wine produced is white. The glory of English wine, however, is sparkling wine, at least two of which are of international standard. Global warming, whilst not precisely providing the south coast of England with a Mediterranean climate, has nevertheless made it easier to grow grapes. Indeed, the climate in Sussex, home of the best of these wines, is not so far removed from that of the Champagne region of France a century ago. Sussex also has a similar terroir, as it were, as Champagne, sharing the chalk-based soil which runs from Champagne through the White Cliffs of Dover to Sussex. Indeed, there are repeated reports of French Champagne firms sniffing around Sussex for possible purchases of land, which, as expensive as land is in England, is spectacularly less so than land in Champagne. In short, whilst there is, as in all winemaking countries, wine which is merely drinkable, a decent amount of English white wine is very good, and most of the sparkling wines are excellent.